Right, hello everybody. It's on already. So I work at London Metropolitan University, and in fact what I do is I teach games programming and design there. But my research interest is in animal-computer interaction. And that's how technology can support the welfare and enrichment of different species other than humans. So that means that I'm always having to work with animal experts, because I'm not the animal expert, but I always work in teams with animal experts, which means that we have a sort of multidisciplinary networking, sharing experiences and skills thing going on, which is fantastic. I love that. So this talk is going to be about some of the things that I've done in the context of elephants and their enrichment. And most of the elephants that you'll see here are elephants that live in a sanctuary. So they've actually grown up with humans. Most of the elephants that you'll see in zoos are protected contact or full contact elephants. So there's always a barrier between the human and the elephant. Whereas some of these elephants, from being babies, they grew up with humans. So it's a more flexible arrangement that they have. Now, I did say in the introduction to this talk that I was going to show elephants doing lots of things. So very, very quickly, I'm just going to show you a few elephants doing lots of different things. This is Colchester Zoo having a lovely mud bath. And here we go. This is Vali, who's at Scandivale, and she's about to be testing a button, which is one of the interactive devices we were making for her. And her keeper here is sort of encouraging her to press this button. You'll see it's actually made out of a big sewing machine pedal. So obviously humans, we switch on lights, we use our fingers, we press it. Why not just scale it up and give it to an elephant? That's completely missing the point, because elephants don't do things like that in the wild. Elephants have a completely different way of interacting with the world. So that's where the animal-computer interaction community comes in, because we have to kind of forget about how humans do things with tech and think about how animals are going to interact with technology if we want to do something for them. And you always have to think about what's the goal of what you're doing. How is it going to support that animal? It's all very well to do lots of nice experiments, but there should be a goal that supports the welfare and enrichment of the animal, especially if the animal is being zoo housed or sanctuary housed. The idea of having a goal for your enrichment is so that you can give the animal something that is like its normal natural behavior. And what's this one? This is Vali again. Oh yeah, shaking and rattling. So really, these two are deeply in love. They're another pair of elephants at Colchester Zoo, and they obviously like doing all the whole trunk contact thing. So elephants love tactile things. Now, I'm just going to jump to the next slide. If you want to test something, it's very easy to train an animal to do something. If you have a banana, you can get an elephant to do just about anything. However, you're never going to find out if they like what it is that you've given them to do, because they're always going to be coming back looking for that banana again. So that's one of the things that, one of the early things that we learned. So this is me trying out some acoustic enrichment. You know, you touch something inside the pipe, it makes a sound, a horrible sine wave. She's not trying to do that. She's looking for the next bit of banana. It's pretty obvious. Yeah, oh, and now she's got an apple or an orange or something. So, because elephants spend such a huge amount of their time foraging and looking for food, then, you know, people who look after elephants think that food enrichment is a very good thing for them. However, it doesn't work if you want to look at acoustic enrichment, which is what I was interested in. So these are some of the things, very, very briefly, that I found. So everything has to be super, super robust. Elephant can pull down a tree and trash it. So anything that you do with your electronics, they're going to be perfectly capable of doing the same thing. If you hide the electronics, you've got to be very careful that there aren't any loose wires, because they'll find them. The most successful things we did were vibro-tactile things. So it was like a touch button, but it also gave feedback because I had a hidden motor behind it, so that when you touched it, it tingled. And then she was interested in it. She wasn't interested in a sewing machine pedal. Of course she could have pressed it, but she didn't want to. Elephants don't press things, they pull things, they tug things. So ropes were good, ropes were very useful, but vibro-tactile was also kind of nice. No bananas, I said that already. Whoops, back to that one again. The other thing is that what worked for me in the back garden, building it out of solid pieces of wood, no problem at all, take it off to an elephant enclosure, it's almost guaranteed to fail. Yeah. So that's the lab versus field thing. So you always have to be willing to compromise and experiment and try things again and again. So the other thing about the real world is, you know, humans, we're so used to buttons and technology and things now, and this idea of everything being digital and on and off and everything, all the wonderful things we see around here, they're all built on this idea that we can, you know, start from something binary, you know, simple, negative, positive, and then build an amazing world from that, which is like our real world. So we're used to that idea. The real world is analog. The real world doesn't have buttons in it. Everything has an amount of distance that it can move. So I wanted to move away from digital things to analog things. So the first successful thing that we did was make a slider. And this is all made out of repurposed materials. So it's actually IKEA drawer sliders. But I got at work, we've got a sort of making place at my work at London Met, and they were able to sort of do the aluminium casing for this to make it all contained. If you want to know how it works, it's got distance sensors at either end. So when the elephant is moving the thumb up and down, which in this case is an old scrubbing brush, it can tell how far away from the top and bottom it is. And it was just a volume control. So it worked, but when I left, I had to leave it behind and I had to disconnect it. Because nobody who lives near elephants wants to hear them at 3 o'clock in the morning putting the volume up, no matter what lovely piece of music it is. So we can see here what happened after I left. It wasn't doing anything, so there was no output associated with it, and yet Lakshmi, the elephant that you can see in the background moving there, she went regularly night after night to play with this thing and move it up and down because it was something that she could play with and control in her enclosure. Lakshmi's blind, so she was always she was the first elephant to go and touch something and, you know, interact with it and play with it. So that was quite nice, you know, it still had a use after I'd left. 2 years later, Vali, the other elephant, you can see in the bottom picture, I think you can see, there were some really juicy green leaves in a bit that they normally use for, you know, hosing down and washing, which is inaccessible in the evening. Vali couldn't reach the green leaves. She got frustrated. She got hold of the slider. Oops, sorry. Sorry, he threw my laptop up there. But that's what she did with the slider. She just smashed it. They could have done that 2 years earlier. They're perfectly capable of doing that, but they didn't want to, you know? So everybody thinks elephants are really destructive and they're gonna, you know, everything has to be made out of stainless steel. It's not the case, you know? If you make something that they're interested in, they're probably gonna play with it for a while. But she could very, very easily have destroyed it. So the next slide shows you something completely different. It's non-tech. This time I managed to persuade my two sons to come with me to Wales to build something. And this was something that the elephant carers there really wanted. They had a geodesic dome in the playground for kids and they wanted to make it into a full-size tire ball. So I think it's a dodecahedron. If you know like how a football is, it's got pentagons and hexagons and you bolt them. The idea was pentagons and hexagons and you bolt them all together. But in this case, it's big tires and slightly smaller tires. So all the tires were donated. And I was lucky that, you know, I got my lads to do all the hard work and I could just kind of cruise around talking to everybody like I usually like to do and every so often pretend to supervise them and they told me to go away and then off it went. I'll speed up this a little bit. There we go. Oops, I stopped it. Didn't mean to stop it. There we go. Oh, I took it back to the beginning. Sorry, it's not controlling that very well. Ah, here. I want it to... I'm trying to slide it along. How do I do that? I'm trying to show you the end. But making a complete mess of it. There we go. How can I jump this across? I'm trying to speed it up. Ah, yeah, I don't know how to do that. So at the very end, we can see that they've fully formed it and rolled it into the elephant enclosure. But I think I've got another slide that demonstrates that here. And when it was in the elephant enclosure, it took them a little while to get used to it, because that's usually what happens when you introduce a new object or a piece of enrichment. But slowly they got the idea that this was something big. They could play with it. They could move it around. And you'll see that in the far picture, this particular elephant who came in contact with this ball, she was... Is that her there? Yeah. So she was actually... she was actually at her end of life stage. So she was, I think, about 58 or something, which is quite old for an elephant. And the ball served another purpose at that stage. Because it was so big and it was so soft, it was something that she could lean on. So it was something that could support her weight in a nice way when she was a little bit unsteady on her feet. And so during the end of life of elephant care stage, the ball had another kind of value for the team at Scandavale there, which was really nice. And you can see here that they're pushing it around and playing with it. So we've got a bit of footage of elephants doing this, and I went back after a couple of months to see if the ball had just been discarded, because that's another thing that happens with enrichment devices. Animals get tired of them. It's like if you were to give your kids or yourself the same toy day after day after day, you know, eventually it would just languish in the cupboard. But it was part of a training session by this stage, so it was a sort of regular activity that the ball had to be moved from A to B, and then you could come in the evening and get your browse and settle down for the night. So it ended up being quite a successful and nice thing to do. And this was something where the elephant carers had suggested that this was what they wanted, rather than me saying, oh, I want to do an experiment with, you know, with a ball. I wanted to do acoustic experiments. They wanted something different. But we were able to compromise with each other so I could give them what they wanted, and in return, they would let me experiment a little bit more with acoustic enrichment. So the reason I'm interested in acoustic enrichment is because humans are so vision-centered. So everything that we do, everything that we... you know, every way that we express ourselves, usually, it's focused on what we can see. So computers and the interface and the screen, it's all about things that you can see that represent either something imaginary or something in reality. We're very, very focused on that. I went to a lovely workshop with Sai yesterday where I was blindfolded and walking around here, having to use other perceptions in order to experience what it was like to be, you know, to not use my eyes for a change. And I really, really enjoyed that experience. It was great. I'm interested in how humans can capture more of that, understand more about how other animals can perceive the world, so that we can make sure that we don't mess up their own normal behaviors and their perceptions. So this it can apply to so many different disciplines. Could apply to architecture, could apply to engineering, could apply to, you know, all the different things that we put on the roads or in the seas. We mess up with other animals' pathways with all the things that we do. We don't think about it sometimes because we don't realize what perceptions they're using to experience their lives in the world. So this is what I'm interested in investigating. So, hang on, there we go, next slide. The next project that I'm involved in at the moment is looking at elephants and their rumbling and their infrasound. So elephants normally in the wild live in big communities, so they have a lot of talking to each other to do. And if you ever go and visit them, the rumbles, you can just hear a kind of low-lying rumble. If it's below about 20, 30 hertz, we can't hear it because it's outside of our spectrum. But you can still pick it up and you might be able to feel it through the ground. And elephants can also feel things through the ground, through their feet. And I think it's believed that they can even triangulate because their ears are way out here somewhere and their feet are here and they lift one leg up and they can know the direction that sounds are coming from. So infrasound, the waves are so big that they can travel all the way across the savannah so that they can use that to communicate with each other long distance. And a typical wild elephant probably knows about 60 or 70 different individual calls from extended family members. Now that's a lot of interesting cognitive and sensory acoustic stimulation that a wild elephant gets. And elephants that are not wild typically don't get that experience. So why don't we think of ways that we can use it with them? So I've got a couple of music technology colleagues who couldn't be with us today, Stephen and Karim. So I gave them some elephant calls, and these are from, we might be able to hear them if I can connect. No internet, oh well, never mind. But the links will be available later. So they did a spectrogram of the calls to see what kind of frequencies they were made up from, because my colleagues can interpret sound, they can also synthesize sound. So they know how to, you know, layer up all the different sound waves to make some kind of additive noise that has a distinctive timbre. So it might be, I don't know, it might be a piano sound, or it might be a trombone sound or something like that. They can do that. They're magicians in that, not me. And what we found was, I think it's teeny tiny here, that they think the sort of fundamental frequency for these calls, these are African elephant calls, is around 20 hertz. But layering on top of that, there are some really strong, clear peaks at around 40 and 60, and then another one at about 170, so I haven't got the glasses on. There we go. Yeah. But the other thing that they said was that these sounds are really musical because the shape of all the different waves, it's very harmonious. It's like a really harmonic sound that they're making, a very melodic sound. So that was kind of interesting. Now, this brings me on to the didgi, which I'm going to try and get a sound out of it here on stage, so, you know, forgive me if this doesn't sound particularly good, because I... Anyway. There we go. Thank you. Unfortunately, I can't do the circular breathing. I need a little bit more practice for that. I am convinced there will be somebody in this field, and probably many people in this field, who could play the didgeridoo a lot better than me. Maybe we'll find some later. So circular breathing, you need to be able to keep that drone going up for a long time, and you can also get lots of lovely inflections in it. So the last time I went up to Scandivale, of course I took my didgi with me because I was interested in infrasound. And the resonant frequency of a didgeridoo is around this kind of 60 to 80 hertz, which interestingly is one of the next frequencies up from the bass frequency of 20 hertz in an elephant call. Now, it's a bit like a trunk, right, isn't it? You know, you set up a wave, you make something vibrate at the top, and then you've got a really long thing that comes out. So Steve and Karim then did a spectrogram of this, and the spectrogram of this is a much flatter thing. It's not as melodic, or it's not as interesting as an elephant call, obviously. But there's a lot of upper harmonics. So an elephant's trunk, I can't remember how many muscles it's got. It's got loads of muscles in it. So they can make calls and they can move their trunk around and get all sorts of lovely noises from it. and this is just a slide saying what they're using. So we're using audio moths. This is the size of an audio moth, which is really, really nice bit of fairly cheap recording equipment. You can set it to pick up very low frequencies. You can set it to pick up really high frequency, so it'd be good for recording bats as well if you wanted to cut out all the low stuff. We're using it the other way around, trying to pick up the low stuff, yeah, in acoustic environments with elephants. And I've been up to Blair Drummond and that's singing. And here's a picture of one of the keepers at Skander Vale, Brother Simon. And funnily enough, he can play the didgeridoo a lot better than I can. So this is him doing a full drone. There's Vali. He doesn't look too impressed. Here's Lakshmi, the blind elephant. A bit more interested. Always very interested in sounds. He's got it going. He's going to get hyperoxygenated soon. And in fact, Vali showed what she thought of didgeridoo playing in no uncertain terms. She was very clear about that. But after I left, and Brother Simon got his own didgeridoo, which you can tell has a deeper sound, but he knows how to play better. This is Vali, and she's back there again. She's got her trunk all wrapped up.
Do you want to play it?
She's really enjoying the vibration. So then he decided, a few weeks after that,
play for it,
that he'd let her have a play.
Yeah. What are you gonna do then?
And she's seen him playing. So I also said that if we're playing it inside, maybe she won't, it's hard surfaces. It's probably making, you know, it's probably vibrating a lot and it's really loud and noisy for them inside their elephant house. Whereas if you take it up onto the fields.
Vali, don't break it.
And she
can hold it. And
what a tease.
Yes.
She could snap it so quickly if she wanted to. But she doesn't want to snap it. She wants to play with it. And of course she can't get a sound out of it because her mouth and the didgeridoo mouth, it's a bit of a mismatch there. But, there we go.
Vali, don't break it.
She's going, I could.
Good girl.
There we go. Right. Oh, right. So that's just some of the work that that I've been doing with elephants, and we're right in the middle of exploring it with different zoos in the UK who would quite like to do some acoustic environmental stuff with us, which is fantastic. So if anybody's got some very, very high quality equipment for recording infrasound, then do get in touch. But I'd like to welcome my colleague Tiff on stage now. And Tiff's also an animal computer interaction person from the Open University. Probably a very well-known face at EMF. And she's going to tell you about some of the projects she's been doing in a similar field.
Hello, everybody. Yeah, I'm a research software engineer at the Open University. And I actually got into the animal computer interaction field through, whilst during COVID, going mad in white linen, I came across one of Fiona's zoo jams where I got talking with a tortoise cognition specialist, and we ended up looking into actually working together on some research that she's doing because, you know, until you actually speak to specialists who work with particular animals, you don't really quite understand how differently they perceive the world, or they work with things, you know, because I've done a lot of work with dogs, and dogs, like humans, get bored of things, but tortoises don't. Tortoises will perseverate for months and months, and they will remember that something happened a year ago, and they'll go back and they'll find that mango tree because mangoes are crack to a tortoise, and they'll keep doing it. So there's some interesting stuff that we can potentially do with technology to support that kind of interaction that tortoises can handle and other animals can't. But every species requires this constant kind of exploration of the cognition that they have of the world. But, oh no, I have got that slide up. So I'm just going to do a really brief sort of overview of some of the work that I've been looking into, which is just how can we enhance agency in animals using technology. And this one was just we were trying to use some machine vision to predict lambing, because the first 48 hours of a sheep's life are the most dangerous, and so anything that we can do to support the lamb and the ewe during that time will be very helpful, particularly to small farmers as well, who don't have access to these kinds of technology. So, you know, we're looking at, can we combine these multimodal, you know, sources of information, like pre-training a model of a water bag using infrared technology? Can we use sounds that the ewes make? Can we predict flocking behavior that will then say that a ewe is about to give birth, and use those to, rather than have a human going by all the time disturbing the animals, can we then let them have a perceived sense of agency without, you know, without them knowing that they are being observed, which is another minefield within the thing. So as a result of this project, we ended up discovering that being able to read animal RFID tags, the EID reader, the commercially available ones are very expensive, and they aren't very customizable. So we ended up developing our own DIY version with, as you can see, some very high-tech plumbing materials as a casing. So also discovered that RFID antennas are wizardry. That was very difficult. And if anybody knows how to tune them to make them different shapes, that would be, please come and talk to me in Shongbot Village. So we're discovering there are so many areas that we can actually use technology in this. So this is another project that I'm working on with. Oh, I thought there was more. Oh, it goes on. So encouraging meaningful locomotion in captive animals is another area that's really interesting, and we're working on a project with tigers to try and recreate the kind of paths that they would take in the wild that would be a lot more complicated and convoluted by using sound and smell and vision, the cues that would then take them through what is essentially a repeating maze with doors that will open and close, and then will extend the paths that they take in captivity, but in a meaningful way, so that they actually have some kind of they're not engaging in a repetitive behavior. They're actually thinking about where they want to go, and they're making choices that will take them to a destination that's being signaled. So it's So there will be quite a lot of different signals that we can use in order to get them to travel around this maze, which is still in production at the moment. And the idea is then it will be scaled up to a large outdoor version as well. So they'll be able to choose between different destinations, potentially with, they'll be signaled that if you go in this direction, there's possibly some food and water, a water source or trees in this direction, and they can make that choice. Oh, yes. So that, just very quick overview. So, just so we can have any Q&As, or if anyone wants to come and talk about this, we'll be in Chonkbot Village.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, that one. Yeah, sorry.
He's gone off. There we go. Yeah, so we're in Chonkbot, and we'd love to speak to anybody who's got any questions or anything they'd like to say or any feedback you'd like to give us, especially if you get me talking about elephants, I'll never stop. So thanks very much, everybody.